Welcome to Response Leadership, brought to you by the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service, a leader in response training. We are a podcast bringing you leadership expertise from the top minds in emergency response. I'm your host, Craig Weaver. I work in marketing and communications here at TEKS.
And today our guest is Kevin Oden, Director of Integrated Public Safety, City of Dallas. Kevin, thanks for joining us today and talking with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on this forum.
Great. Thank you. We'll just dive right in here. What is integrated public service? What is that? And how did you get to this? But that's a huge question. How did you get to this point?
Absolutely. And, you know, really what we do is face the challenges just as a dedicated department that every city or county, state and federal level deal with on a daily basis, right? So mental health, substance abuse, interrupting cycles of violence, and then focusing on the areas of our city that are considered to be high crime, right? And so we take, we have multidisciplinary response teams that help us address some of the behavioral and mental illness as well as substance abuse challenges in our city that really are very significant in a large city like Dallas. We utilize credible messengers in the field, as well as our nonprofit groups that know the community better than anybody at the city ever will, to interact with residents, particularly our youth and young adults, that they may not know or have experienced a lot of the things that we take for granted every day. And so we try to show how opportunities exist, not just, you know, outside of your area, but within the whole region, just to try to open up new doors and make connections and keep youth and young adults engaged. I think that's one of the big challenges we face. And then last, on our crime prevention, we take generally it's large, older apartment complexes, but also areas where you see different types of properties that are in the same area that create risk for future acts of violence. And we try to flood those areas, not only with traditional law enforcement to deter, but then also certain steps such as the crime prevention through environmental design, bringing in social services, after school programming, all the things that we can use to try to bring investments to communities that at their heart, the reason that we find them to be high crime, quote unquote, is because of a lack of historic investment. So that's really our big three areas, and we break it down from there. We've got a team of about 150 across all of those different teams that are working on those challenges and others that come to us day in and day out.
This podcast being about leadership, that's a lot of people to deal with and to work with. How difficult is that to do?
So, you know, when you have a great team that's bought in and they feel fulfilled, in some cases it's just the daily administrative of personnel and things that come up within just managing your own people. You know, I think where the real value is, though, is while we have a significant amount of staff, in the grand scheme of things, we're still very small, and we need and rely on others, police department, fire department, our health services and community wellness departments. You know, we have to engage those departments as well as those not in the city, community-based groups. Because really that's where the change comes, is when we're all pulled together. And so you take these different groups that all have different competing priorities placed upon them. They all have different expectations from the council or the community. And so we have to really work to marry up, you know, where are we working? Why are we working there? How do we get the best out of the finite resources we have and then celebrate what the accomplishments of those groups are. And so it's an internal, but it's also an external when you're trying to manage those things. And so, you know, I think that most of my time is spent on the latter, the external.
Okay.
And you got to do it without, you know, trying to come in heavy handed or say, no, guys, this is the way we're going to do it. You know, in my experience here at the city, that's the quickest way that you might not get anything done. And so, you know, being a good listener and you know, the facilitation skills and those sorts of the softer skills are very important to help bring those departments into the fold and let them know that that what they do is incredibly valued and makes a difference. I mean, I think that's what all of us in local government are really here for, is just to try to make a difference and improve people's lives, you know, really 1% at a time.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a couple of things. The first thing when you said, when I asked you about that is making people, having people that feel fulfilled. And then you touched on a couple of things about leadership. What is it you think makes a good leader?
I think number one is someone that demonstrates very good self-control.
Okay.
You know, I've learned, and certainly the things I've learned are I've learned them two ways. Either one, it's because I screwed up and had to do some self-evaluation,
right.
Or number two is I learned from others. And so, like, I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The chief there at Teeks, Chief Coatney,
yes,
he was our fire chief here. And one of the lasting legacy statements that really sticks with me that he said, I had the easiest job in the world. I set the vision and I turned the experts loose. And that's kind of always stuck with me.
Okay.
Is that, you know, when you are the director, it ain't about you dictating the tactics. You got to turn over some things. You got to build the capacity and capability of your staff and see them continue to promote up within the organization. And so number one is obviously self-control. I think being even keel and approaching every day consistently, not getting too high, not getting too low.
Yeah.
When you win and you move on. And when you lose and you move on, but take advantage of your moments. And then three other quick things that we really value here as a team. And this really is what our team built, and we kind of hold each other accountable to it. You know, how we set our desires or the perception of what we're trying to do. Like we got to be able to perceive and have an end state that we're building towards. Number two is our discipline. So when things affect us that we can control, are we spending our time doing the things we know we should be doing and avoiding the things that distract us? And then last is our dedication. So when things externally put pressure on us or affect us, are we dedicated to sticking to that first thing I mentioned, our end state that we're trying to build towards, and not like going down different trails and losing sight of, you know, really what we're trying to build. And so those really four things are, to me, very, very important. And to our staff, like, I think that their culture and what they want this department and their city to be like, you know, I'm kind of an amplifier of that for them. Mm. And so, you know, that's what we try to do here day in and day out.
How did you get here? What's your background? Did you aspire to be in leadership in this respect?
I went to college and I was going to major in like business or something. And one day I woke up and I was like, man, I really hate numbers, which, you know, is probably not a good thing if you want to stumble upon business. And I found the major of doing emergency management.
Okay.
My first thought was, you know, I was a kid when Dante's Peak, the volcano movie, came out with Pierce Brosnan. And so that was the first thought that came to mind. I was like, wow, I could be the volcano guy and out there directing things. And I
managing quickly, that emergency.
I quickly found out that it's definitely not that glamorous of a profession. but I learned through my time in OEM, and I would encourage, frankly, anybody in government. If you want to learn how to get things done in government, go work in OEM, where you're always the sky is falling, or this is the threat, right, and you're trying to get departments that, like, man, we're just trying to get the trash picked up. And you want me to care about if an asteroid hits Dallas? Like, if you can get things done in OEM, you know how to get things done in government. And I see that in our team here. And so I started there. I moved on to helping set up our original multidiscipline team here at the city, the Right Care program, which does our mental health response. From there, I got an opportunity literally right before COVID to lead the Office of Homeless Solutions here. No homeless background at all. And just,
I remember you telling me that. Yeah. I think that is a monumental thing to be dropped upon you.
It was, especially as we got there on Monday and, you know, just wide eyed, like, oh my gosh, we got this opportunity. We're going to fix homelessness in Dallas. Like, how difficult could this be? Right. Just totally naive to the realities of the world. And by Friday, we're setting up our convention center to serve as the largest shelter in Dallas because COVID hit and all the other shelters had to adjust for that. So I got to use the OEM experience for that year there. And I learned a lot. I really think, like, just as a person, not having worked in human services before that, like, that was a super good year for me. Just to grow, to learn, to understand, to be like, well, the guy on the street, like, why wouldn't he just go to a shelter? It's so easy, right? But it's not. You learn so much in those human services. And then ultimately, when they hired the new director there, I got to come here and be in IPS. And this was actually my original destination before they moved me to OHS. And it was interesting. Our original intent was really just on focusing on properties and high crime areas and linking together code and PD and our attorneys and like. And like many of the cities and counties in the U.S., after the death of George Floyd happened, you know, we started adding different components of reimagined public safety, and they all kind of fell under this group. So I think what was originally intent to be like a three-person, four-person group has grown into what it is today.
Wow.
And, you know, just super grateful for all of those opportunities. I think that, you know, somewhat being in the right place at the right time has helped me over the years. But, you know, I think I've got a good recognition of there's a lot of opportunities I've gotten in my career that maybe others didn't get. And so I'm always trying to think about, for my staff and others, like, how do we give other people those same opportunities? Step aside, you know, and when you get to a leadership role or a directorship, like, you don't have to prove yourself anymore. You just got to make sure that the boat makes it to its destination and give your people opportunities to stand in the spotlight. And you never know what skills they might demonstrate or how they might grow when you do that. So that's kind of where I'm at now in my career.
Okay.
The only other thing I'd say on that is, like, this past year has really taught me a lot. I've become much more aware of, like, we really romanticize about the great leader, like George Patton and in the movie and all of that. But, you know, the management side of it and being a really good manager first, or being a good manager while being a good leader. Like, no one celebrates being a great manager, right? But it's so important because, you know, motivating people and doing the whole rah-rah leadership stuff, it can get you so far. But if you don't have the right procedures and standards and data and all that in place, like, that stuff can fall apart. And so that's really where I am in my career now, is just really honing in on, am I building the type of things that as a manager you would be proud of, and building my team to lead, obviously, but also to be really good managers as well.
When you're in a position where you have something dropped in your lap? Hey, we want you to try to do what you can to tackle something like homelessness in Dallas or any of the other big issues you faced in your career. Where do you start from there? Like, as far as like resources, where do you go to say, in your head, you're thinking, I don't know where to start here. Where do I go?
That's a fantastic question, right? but it's a simple answer. You go to the experts, right? Okay. So when we were doing the setup of the convention center to be a shelter, you know, the first call was like to all the shelters in Dallas. Like, sure. Okay, how do we do this? When we were, when I was in OEM, you know, we faced Ebola here in Dallas. And, you know, you remember the dog, Nina Pham's dog, Bentley. I remember just conference calls with like the CDC and everybody else is like, well, what do we do with this dog? Can the dog get Ebola? Or how do we cross this? And so, you know, we were fortunate actually that Texas A&M and their vet clinic came up here and like had converted an old commanding officer's house on a naval base, old naval base up here. We converted the XO's house into like a hot, warm and cold zone for the dog to live in. And the A&M vets would go in every day. And so it's just those things where like,
wow.
I don't know anything about Ebola, or I don't know nearly anything about homelessness, but I know I have a decent enough Rolodex that we bring those people in, we listen to them, and you know, we just try to act on the best of all the incomplete information you have without, you know, trying to be the one with more than like 30% of the answer yourself.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, in that respect, when you are in a position looked at as a leader, as a director for answers, and you would say something like, well, I don't know. Is it important to be in your opinion, as a leader, is it important to be vulnerable and have some humility in terms of trying to figure out answers?
Oh, 100%. Like, I think probably earlier in my career, definitely one of the challenges I struggled with was like, I don't want to be seen as inadequate. So I want to have all the answers and I want to be upfront and say, well, here's what we're going to do. And you do this and you do that. And, you know, really learned a lot about it's more, what can we do for you in this moment? And looking at, and complex problems, you may have 10 different groups, and it's what can we do to support you? What can we do to support you? And then following through with it. Because like I said earlier, if we're at a table in a meeting and I've got more than 30% of the solution in my brain, it's probably not going to be a good outcome. There's there's about a mile's worth of beach of knowledge in this head, but it's all about an inch deep, right? So it's all just kind of knowing who does what and trying to put them in the position to be successful. And be comfortable with being behind the scenes and not getting credit is actually a really good thing, I found. And not being afraid to be like, I don't really want any credit. I'm happy to stand behind the scenes as long as we're as a team advancing and getting things done for our residents. Yeah. Like that's where the focus should be. And you know, when there's credit and other things to be had out there, like there's elected officials, there's people that the public trusts or cares about way more than me or anybody else around here that like prepare them to go out and give the talking points and things as the public listens to them. Right. So just, I think it's a continuous learning and just evolution as you face and experience more, you just kind of learn these things. And I think even if I had a time machine and could go back in time to like, you know, 25-year-old Kevin and try to give him this type of advice, it may not even stick, right? It's just you learn it over time to try to advance yourself, better yourself, really.
Well, have mentors been an important factor in your life and your career?
Oh, 100%, 100%. Okay. Whether it's people that have poured into me just like interpersonal throughout my career, you know, folks I still talk to every day or at least weekly, monthly, that like, hey, I'm facing this challenge. What are your thoughts? Or, you know, in written word of like other people's advice or experiences of how they handle things. You know, I think that there's so much to be learned from the experiences of others that prepare us in ways that, you know, we could never prepare ourselves. And so I look at people here all over the city that, that I go to, whether they're, you know, people I work with all the time or people I barely talk to, like on a business sense, they all have something to offer me that's a different perspective than how I would see it. And that's what I value so much is, you know, I've got my own eyes on the world and my own way of seeing things, and others just bring you, you know, that 360 look at, you're not seeing this. This is your blind spot. Yeah. And so always welcome that. I think really anybody could be a mentor to you just based on their life experiences.
Sure. Well, how would you describe your leadership style?
If I had to pick like two historical figures that I really study a lot and try to model things after, number one, the former coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Bill Walsh, like his philosophy of the score takes care of itself and living in the moment and taking care of all the details you can take care of now is just a mindset that really try to chase after. Don't get ahead of where we're at right now in the present and do everything we can in the present. But then the other that I look at and just absolutely learned so much from just the way he did things way back is Marcus Aurelius from the Roman time, like his backstory and his writings and the meditations and everything that he says, like just from a Stoic perspective, have been really helpful to me, is like where we started when I talked about just being even keel, not getting too high, not getting too low. I mean, those are the lessons that we learned from those back in time. So a bit of like two very, very different people. But I try to model after what I've learned from them. And, you know, I think the one thing I would say is like, for anybody that's trying to enhance their leadership skills is like, probably don't go out and just start reading books and like try to adapt things. It may not be genuine to you. So like, know
that's great.
Who you are, know what your strengths are, know what your weaknesses are, and then seek out those that in the past or that are, could be mentors to you today that can augment. They can point out, hey, I struggled with this too, or this was my strength, and build from that foundation instead of just trying to like, you know, read the latest self-help book that's like, if you just follow these seven steps, you're going to become a millionaire. It's you know, there's just so much more nuance to it and so much more about like self-awareness that that's so important to leaders.
I usually ask people that I'm speaking with, what's the biggest challenge you face? And I usually ask it early in the podcast, but you had mentioned when I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, two things I wanted you to kind of talk about, chasing the yeses and managing expectations. I'm not sure I've ever had anyone say the biggest challenge is managing expectations. So I wanted to hear from you about that. Thought that was interesting.
Absolutely. So when a problem is facing us, and it could be like the big shock complex event, or it could be just the daily stressors of things that bubble up as managing at least a division within a city, or heck, even to like a mayor or a city manager or whatever you may be. I think everybody wants somebody that you just throw the problem to them and they're like, I got this, right? And in many cases, we face challenges, as I mentioned earlier, with high crime properties. These are high crime properties because of 30, 40, 50 years of really design of the environment around it or the investment. And so people expect, well, we're just going to throw the IPS team at it and they're going to fix it in 6 months. Right. And, you know, it just doesn't, it doesn't work that way. Right. Even, even if we parked a cop car and we had social workers and every resource under the sun at some of these complexes, and we kept them there for a year straight, you know, ultimately you always got to move on, right? You got to go to the next property or the next property. And so some of that stuff is band-aids. The real change comes in housing development money or the bond program or just like how we build these areas back up. And how long does it take to build a road, right? Like years and years and years, much less like change an entire area. And so I think when you take on these big complex challenges as a leader, like break it down. What are the phases? What can you get done that's low hanging fruit? What's going to be kind of medium effort, medium impact, and then, you know, high effort but high impact? And, you know, try to stack up wins early is always what we try to do. And that's that low hanging fruit of things you can do while keeping that desire, that perception on where you want to be in the long run. But like I said, I think early in my career, I'd always be like, oh yeah, they want me to fix this. We'll get after it and we'll have it done next week. Right. And it just doesn't work that way. Like in anything, whether it's personal or professional, it's just, you gotta buy yourself realistic time, but then come back with realistic of like, okay, here's what our team, not me, but our team can deliver towards this challenge.
Yeah. What would you say is the thing that's the most rewarding about what you do?
Oh, easy. The smiles on either the staff's faces when they know they did something for someone else, right? Or finding out about the work that someone did or the great effort they poured into someone's life here in the city. And you get to praise them for it.
Okay.
And so there's no better feeling than those two things, because that's what we're here for, right? We're here to just help improve people's lives. And so when it's either someone's doing it or I hear about someone's doing it, like effusive praise on them for the impacts they're making. And I think that keeps them motivated, but then also it sometimes I think even as well, definitely we do this as leaders, is like, we're just like, okay, that's great. We did great there, and throw it over your shoulder. Let's keep moving, because there's this other problem to tackle. And as staff, particularly those that like answer live 911 calls and that sort of thing, like it's on to the next call.
Right.
They got to have time to celebrate when they do something like truly special and not just like, well, I did this great thing, even though, you know, that's kind of what we want to be. We want to be consistent, but we also need to recognize when we do something good for others. And so those are always my best days here for the staff, and just love every chance we get to do that. I do want to give a plug if I can.
Absolutely.
For Teaks, all of our work in crime prevention through environmental design, we had Charlie from y'all's team come up here, and he did a week-long class. And Charlie is just a great facilitator. Like, he did this whole week-long 40-hour class by himself, which cannot be easy.
Right.
but he did it, and he was very clear with us. Like, it was the first time he had delivered that class where there were very few officers in the room. So we had some of our detectives there. But the primary people in the class were our crime prevention specialists, which are civilians that have mostly like a code enforcement background. But then also some of our city attorneys and the community prosecutors that focus on making some of the changes in properties and, you know, taking people to court when they're not compliant. So we had that multi discipline type team, take this class. And, you know, ever since then, like, we've seen the knowledge that Charlie passed on to us just kind of help us take off. Total plug for Charlie, for that class, and for that effort, just investing in us. And it's really helped us, I think, take off as a group. And so we're super appreciative of Teeks and y'all pouring that into us.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, thank you personally, too, for your time and sharing with us. It's been great talking with you. Thank you.
I just feel honored to be on the podcast. Like, when I went on the website and just seeing some of the people you've interviewed over the time, like, number one, I was a bit jealous of you, is being able to hear from and learn some of these things from others. But number two, just honored that that you would include us in this group.
Thank you for listening to Response Leadership, brought to you by the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave a review and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit us at teeks.org/podcast. New episodes are released on the fourth Tuesday of every month.